Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Mr. Jackson.
Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Yes. Cloudlandia is a surprising place.
It is. It's always full of surprises. I saw a funny meme this morning. It was a picture of a poster that said, "Vote for Rick Astley. He'll never," and then it had check boxes for give you up, let you go, let you down, tell a lie. Vote for Rick Astley. Here's what he'll never do.
But he is a whiner.
Yes, that's right.
He'll be telling you every day, never let you go, never let you down. And after a while, it just gets boring. You want to leave him and you want to let him down and leave him behind.
I'd love to hear like a psychologist break that kind of whine. You're right. There are a lot of ways. I'd never do that to you.
Yeah, there's a form of manipulation where you protest that you would never do the thing to someone else that you're actually doing to them.
Yes, exactly. A little less. That's so funny.
Yeah.
You know what?
Yeah.
Do the
listeners to this podcast, do they hear the music?
No, they do not. It's just I have a pro account of our conference line that we have, and one of the perks of that is you can set your own hold music while people are dialing in. If they're the first one to dial in, they'll hear music until the host joins the party. You've got it set up for the Rick Astley Never Gonna Give You Up song. So that's why Dan and I always joke about if we're the first one on, it's reminded that I'm never going to let you down, never going to give you up.
But we do so check funny. The box for each other. We do check the box for each other.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
We always
this
show
is
up.
I've been thinking more about, I saw that Russell Barkley ADHD video again. And, you know, this, our situation here, checks all the boxes of what it's 80, you know, compliant in that we have an external structure set up in our calendar that is, there's no thinking involved. I know that at the appointed hour that you're going to be here, I'm going to be here, and we never miss unless prearranged. I mean, unless there's something that is going on. And I was realizing how, you know, the way I approach my calendar and the way that I approach my desire stuff, I always feel like I need lots of space, lots of like, I want to keep my calendar free of time commitments and obligations. But it's the more and more I look at it, I realize that the only things that get done are the things that are externally out, you know, scheduled and happen, you know. To contrast that, like I look at your approach to your time, to your calendar, you're booked an entire year out, a rolling year. You know exactly there's very little discretionary. Well, there is discretionary time built, lots of that built in, but the majority of the things are there. And that's, to me, the more I look into it, one of the key attributes of applying yourself is getting applied into the real world, and your calendar is the evidence.
Well, the key to applying yourself is to get things that apply you.
Yes, that's exactly right.
And, you know, in my world, things apply me. You know, I've got deadlines where I've committed or obligated, depending on the nature of the topic, to other people, and my reputation. My reputation, you know, is based on me following through on my commitments and obligations.
Yeah, and you may be on a streak, Dan, that might be unrivaled in terms of your small books. Now you're over 30 small books.
34.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I wonder how many people have kept up a pace like that. You know, you're coming up on pretty soon, it's going to be 10 years of that, 8 years so far of a book every quarter with no quarters missed.
Yeah, when we get to 40, it'll be 10 years.
Yeah.
And which will be some
closer to 40.
The end of next year. I think it's the end of next year or somewhere 2024. Yeah. And and it's not only a structure for me, but it's a structure for 9 other people. I immediately interact with the various team members who have a part in mm-hmm. the book, audio, video, printing, you know, writing, editing, interviewing, and it just moves forward. Everybody expects it, and then there's a distribution system when the books go out to coach clients, and And three of those books popped up and became major market books with Ben Hardy as the collaborator and Hay House and Tucker Max as collaborators on it. And that was a surprise to me. I mean, I wasn't writing the books for that purpose. But now that I know that can happen, it's something I keep in mind when I'm writing the book, you know, is what I'm saying.
This one got the potential, right? Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, if you're consciously lucky, after a while, you consciously do everything that's going to make you even luckier in the future.
Oh, that's true. That's so funny.
Luck is a skill. I think lucky is something that happens to you. But if you're conscious at all, you say, now, why did this, you know, why am I lucky and other people aren't lucky? And you said, well, you know, I was there early. I was prepared. You know, I was cooperative in the situation, you know, and I supported other people. And you begin to see that luck actually is it seems like a big thing, but it's broken down into a whole number of behavioral.
I'm down in Delray Beach again. This weekend, Luba and I just had dinner with Mark LaChance and Sonia last night. And so he's written a book called The Lucky Formula. And that's his that's part of his whole thing. It's luck like that. But how was Free Zone this week? You were in Chicago, you had workshops.
Yeah, it was great. And I'm doing something this quarter I hadn't done before, speaking of the small books. When I start, this could be a Zoom session or it could be an in-person session. I put the cover picture of the latest book up on the screen, and then I bring out a concept for the latest book. And so the book I'm writing right now, the book that just came out is Capitalism - and Everything Else.
Yeah,
and then I've taking capitalism, and I said capitalism is a methodology that consists of 5 growth stages. The first is pricing, you know, and knowing how to price yourself in the marketplace and getting better at it. And then that your creativity over time creates intellectual property, so property, and allows you to buy other kinds of property. And then you become more productive, getting things done faster, easier, cheaper, and producing a bigger result. And then things become more profitable as your revenues and income increase. You keep more of it as profit. Mm-hmm. And that allows you to indulge yourself and those around you in prosperity. And but it's a flywheel. So when you're finished one round, one capitalist project, then you rinse, you re-lather, and you do it again with another project. And really successful entrepreneurs have flywheels that are the 5 P's, pricing, property, productivity, profitability, prosperity. They have many different flywheels. If you think about your eight profit, each of them has a flywheel inside of it, a 5-stage growth process. Then I asked them, well, what's the best you've done in each of the 5? And what would be a next improvement with each of the 5? And so they do that. And I said, now pick 3 that you have the biggest response to. You've written down 2 for each of the 5. So you got 10 things written down. Pick 3 of them. And then we put them into a triple play where how are these two connected to each other. Then you write down the connections, and then you have a breakout session where people talk about this, and then you have a general discussion when people come back from the breakouts, whether it's in person or Zoom. And then I say, okay, now let's go a step higher. Let's take your connections, the three connections, and connect the connections. And that's where the real breakthroughs happen. People just say, oh my God, that's amazing. That's amazing. And so with the free zone, I'm usually ahead of the rest of the, you know, the program. So with free zone, I'm putting out the most advanced stuff. So I wrote down on the whiteboard, this is on Tuesday in Chicago, I put down on the whiteboard, your future is guessing and betting. Okay, your future is all guessing and betting.
That's
okay,
so true.
And then I put down, well, first of all, I just talked about that. Everybody talks about, oh, the future can be predicted, and the big data now is predicting the future, and artificial intelligence is predicting the future. And no, somebody's making a guess that big data will predict the future, and they're betting on it.
That's the truth.
Yeah. I mean, and the reason is that if big data predicted the future, everybody who's using big data would be successful. But I had a discussion with someone, and he said, you know, big data is going to predict the future for us. And I said, well, do you remember when Brexit happened? It caught everybody by surprise.
Nobody.
What about Trump? What about Trump? I remember 7 o'clock at night. And a bunch of happy news media were saying the New York Times.
That was still the funniest thing.
I still watch there's like these compilations that go for about an hour. And I said, it's just really interesting to watch the transformation downward to people who thought this was in the bag, you know?
Oh, yeah. 7 o'clock, they're predicting who Hillary will have in her cabinet and what's her going her first 100 days and her moves.
Yeah, and what does history tell us? What does history tell us about what kind of president she's going to be? And, you know, fans are saying, well, this is going to be one of the most remarkable presidencies. These next 4 years are going to be some of the most surprisingly unpredictable 4 years. And I said, well, that turned
the next 4 hours are going to be
that turned out to be true.
Yeah.
You know, and then COVID, you know, COVID, I didn't see any big data predictable. So, you know, and what I'm saying is that the people who are creating big data systems are guessing and predicting, and we all do that.
You know, so then there's always, in looking back, there always is somebody who was predicting these things. Somebody was predicting a global pandemic being a problem.
If you look, you had a film of a broken clock 24 hours backwards.
Yeah, but nobody was
right. It was right
nobody
twice.
Nobody was betting on it. That's
it was right, yeah. Things only make logical sense looking backwards. Nothing makes logical sense looking forward. And, you know.
Yeah, what was that? There was somebody, I think it was, they would say about Harry Dent that he correctly predicted 17 of the last three downturns. Yeah.
Al Gore, you know.
right. Well, that's inconvenient.
This would be in the 1990, when did he become famous? It would have been 2000, around 2000, because he became famous for something negative in 2000.
Yeah.
Anyway, but then around 3 or 4 years, he licked his wounds and he went out, and then he became a prophet of the climate. He became a climate prophet, you know, and then he was talking about how the Himalayas would be without snow by 2020, and that didn't true. The Rockies actually had more snow than in the history, the written history of the Rockies. They had like 600 feet, accumulated feet of snow. That's 50 feet, 50 feet of accumulated snow. So they're expecting massive floods on the westward side of the Rockies, which is California, you know, California and Nevada and others. Other folks are going to get a wet summer. Anyway, so anyway, I put that out, and then we talked about that, and then I just put down on the board the three geometry rules. So the title of the current book is Geometry, and that's in quotation marks. Geometry for staying calm and cool. Cool and calm, staying cool and calm. And there's three rules, and we've talked about this on a previous podcast.
I love
podcast.
The three rules.
The three rules are, ahead.
One, everything is made up.
Yeah, everything's made up.
Number two, nobody's in charge.
Right.
And number three, nothing is fair.
Life's not
fair. Life isn't fair. Life is not
fair. Life's not fair. So I put those up. And so this was, we had about 50. We had 50 coach clients for the free zone. And boy, did the room go crazy. I mean, the room went crazy for a solid hour. And people said, when I hear those rules and I put them together with each other, I feel freed up. I said, yeah, but I can find you a person out in the general world who, if they heard the three rules, it would make them feel even worse than they're feeling right now.
Well, we were just talking this morning, Luba and I, there's this week, Biden announced their new housing fairness program that's going to give, homebuyers with lower credit scores better, more favorable terms on mortgages than people with high credit scores to make it more fair.
That sounds profoundly unfair to me.
Exactly. But in the all thing, it's funny that the intention is to make it more fair for the people with lower credit scores. Yeah. Which it just seems so crazy,
Yeah. And well, they did that before the subprime loan thing. And it was with Fannie Mae, the two big lending, the guaranteed.
Yeah.
Freddie Mac and Fannie. But what they did is that they could no longer turn down loans. And what they broke it out was postal zones, that you had postal zones. Mm-hmm. Postal zones had credit ratings. In other words, most of the people live in this postal zone, are subs. They're sub positive as someone you'd want to lend money to if you lived in this postal zone,
Yes. And prime.
Yeah, they are subprime. We will give subprime loans to subprime borrowers. And what it did, it took all the risk out of lending because it was backed up by the government. And then they could take the loans and they could tranche them. There's an interesting word, tranche. T-R-A-U-N. Hey, Dean, why don't we sharpen our knives tonight? And tomorrow, let's just get together and just spend the whole day tranching.
Yes, exactly.
Tranche means to cut up an investment into 30 parts and then take other investments and then mix it all together and put a number of what the value is and send it out around the world with no following paperwork that indicates what's what. And that's what really happened. Yeah. So you had single mothers who worked in a casino in Las Vegas and they had three kids who owned five houses. Okay. That was the, I'm trying to think of the, Siri really tries. I got to give her this. She really tries to be useful, but she isn't. Who is that guy who wrote the book?
The Big Short.
The Big Short.
Big Short.
And everybody was playing a Ponzi scheme. I mean, it was a global Ponzi scheme,
right?
Like you said.
Yeah.
And then it all collapsed. But the U.S. was the worst of it. The U.S. banking system was absolutely the worst on this. And the companies and everything. Everybody wanted to get in the feeding frenzy. And then, the feeding frenzies are good until you're the food.
Right, exactly. I was thinking about those words of guessing and betting. And it's funny, but it reminds me of hedge funds and what the capital allocators are doing at the highest levels, right? Guessing and betting. And that's and they're guessing right based on, you know, really better insight, better interpretation, I guess.
We all do it. It's human. The only way we as humans can deal with our individual experience as individuals is to guess and bet. You get up in the morning and you've made a guess and somewhat of a bet on what today is going to be. And then you, at the end of the day, if you do some evaluation, you say, you know, I bet on this today, but it's not a good, I can tell it's not a good bet for tomorrow. And then you change your bet for tomorrow, but you're guessing, you know. And that's what the human brain does. It's a guessing and betting mechanism.
And it's
constantly shifting. Yeah, that's what makes life so delightfully unpredictable.
So how, what was the idea then of what do you do with this?
Well, then I said, I put together an exercise, which is called best guesses and bets. And I had the, you know, the free zoners, I had them just brainstorm the best guesses that they have made, you know, going back as far as they want to go. They can pick the ladder, they can pick their career or everything, but put down your best guesses. And then pick three of them and explain why that was a really good guess. Example, my lifetime partnership with Babs was a good guess. And I put it down. It's also a great bet, you know. It's a great bet. But what you end up with, you brainstorm guesses, pick three, and then you brainstorm bets, pick three. And for variety's sake, if you've one of them is a guess, don't put it down as a bet so that you get a variety of the. And then you pick six out of the six, you know, the six final contestants and you're thinking, you pick three of them and then you do a triple play exercise on it. And boy, it's an exercise that goes forever because the conversations are so amazing on it, you know. So
you know, it's really,
from my standpoint, the little books now are starting to become active players in the next round of workshops. So I was very pleased with the result at the end, because not only did I do the book that's just out, the capitalism and everything else, but I'm doing the new book, Geometry for Staying Cool and Calm.
Now, isn't that interesting? This whole, you know, I think back in 1999, I was going through a process of, I was deciding, okay, what would I like to invest in? I don't want to become a stock trader or picker or anything like that. I started thinking about what would be, you know, 25-year decisions. Could I make 25-year decision to invest in something that you don't need to think about over the next things? I went through a process of, you know, thinking. I found it really interesting that in order to think that way, I had to think what companies that are around today are going to be here in 25 years, if I'm to bet, right? And I see where your idea of guessing and betting. So I was guessing, thinking, okay, if I could have
Is brainstorming, you know, guessing.
Yes, I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
So I started brainstorming and thinking, if I could have anybody manage my money, what I would love, I would bet on Warren Buffett. I said, because I'm not going to learn how to do that. So he does it better than anybody. And so I bought two shares of Berkshire Hathaway and put that, you know, as a sort of thing, you know. Then I started thinking, okay, what company is going to be here 25? If I could own any company, and I started thinking about Procter & Gamble as a, you know, a collection of tides not going anywhere and all the, you know, they've been in business since 1854, and they've, you know, had the number one brands in so many categories, but that's going to continue for.
Well, the interesting thing, there was an article in yesterday's Wall Street Journal on how, in spite of the fact that P&G has raised its prices in all product categories, sales are increasing. That's how much of a good bet it is.
Right. And so that was my second. I only picked three stocks. That was the other one. And then I thought about a growth stock that I wanted to have there. And at the time, my thought was Starbucks, because they had such a simple model, more stores, more money, totally, you know, even if they overexpanded, they could easily track, because it's all made up of individual outposts. That the more outposts they have, the better they're going to be in 1999.
And they're not franchises.
That's exactly right.
With one exception, Magic Johnson has. He's the only one who's got franchises.
That's right.
He's been a good guess. He's been a good guess and bet.
Yeah. And that, so that was my third pick. But what I missed out on at that point from the Vista of 1999, if you look now, those have been really great picks, by the way, over the period of time. But what I missed out on, making that decision in 1999 with that branch of money, that capital allocation then was, I didn't bet on Amazon. I didn't bet on Google. I didn't bet on Facebook wasn't even around at that point, but, missed out on that. Apple was the other one. And so you look at it from looking backwards in 1999, the three to pick would have been, if you picked Amazon, Google, and Apple, that would have been, equally great, but you couldn't, the view forward wasn't as certain in my mind.
It was a guess. Interestingly, of the three, Warren Buffett himself has only bet on Apple. That's the only
one
he bet on.
Yeah.
And
only recently.
That's the only technology stock that he's actually bet on. He says, first of all, I understand the company. He says, if I don't understand the industry and I don't understand the company, he says, I don't have any basis for making a bet because I just don't understand it. But there are blue chips, of all the technology stocks, Apple is the blue chip stock. It's got market dominance in many areas.
Yes.
Okay. And they have built in profitability because they're the highest.
Yes.
Whatever they come out with are the most profitable in the
premium
field.
Brand.
They're premium. Yeah. And those check his boxes for, first of all, just noticing them in the first place and then actually betting on them.
Well, he's actually the reason that I made those choices that I made. He said something that was really interesting. Like, he doesn't bet on technology because he can't see who's going to be the clear winner.
Yeah,
5 years from now, even.
Yeah, so I mean, that would be especially true with the new chat, the AI, the GPT. I mean, instantly there's a million competitors out there that are doing something, and you don't see where the assembly into a giant is going to be. Google was caught by surprise, and so there's nothing to bet on, actually.
Yeah. But Warren said of the technology, I don't know who's going to be the clear winner, but he said, I know that 25 years from now, men are going to go to bed and they're going to wake up with whiskers, and that King Gillette is going to be there to help them solve that problem in the morning, like he has been since the 1800s. Yeah. And I know that people are going to love hamburgers, and they're going to wash them down with a Coca-Cola. It's not going out of style,
Yeah, and I know things are going to still be transported by railroad. I know that.
Right.
And I know oil and gas. I know oil and gas are still going to be good bets, you know?
Yeah. And it's really, it's a funny thing when you really take the vista from 25 years in the future, some future point, that you have to really connect that through line, and that helps you make those decisions. This is a very big, simple idea. Almost seems like so simple that it seems obvious, but it's profound when you really think about the implications of it and you really practice it. You start to think, okay, what am I guessing that's going to happen in this particular, you know, especially when you think about it as brainstorming, like you said, but when you narrow your focus to a particular, you know, thing, when you narrow your focus, start looking at something there, what am I guessing is going to be true about this in, you know, this is kind of similar to my Florida migration project I'm working on, of that I'm guessing based on everything I see that over the next 10 years, Florida is a good, it's growing. We're growing by 1,500 people a day right now, and that's projected to continue through the next 10 years to, well, a little less than that now, because when I first started thinking about this, it was 2021. But by 2030, that's the path that it's projected to, along with the, you know, most predictable march demographically in the history of the world is the baby boomers inevitably marching their way into retirement, you know, and the leading baby boomers now are 58 years old. And
the youngest. The youngest of boomers are 59. Yeah, 58 or 59.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
That's what I meant. Yeah. Sorry, the lagging.
Yeah. So, well, and the other thing that makes inflation predictable, I would say, for at least the next 10 years. And the reason is that en masse over about a 20-year period, the highest level of systematic skills in the American economy are leaving the marketplace right now over a 20-year period. And, you know, it started happening in 2010. It started, the boomers were starting to retire, and it'll go on for another 6 years or so. That huge phalanx, there's a word I haven't used on a podcast, a phalanx.
You know, 50 points, 50 bonus points. That's a big word.
Yeah, for first person to say phalanx, yes. And knows that it's, you know, that it's a military term. Anyway, but you have this massive about people who have what I call implicit knowledge of how things get done. Implicit are things that can't be written down in a rule book, but the rules have been worked out with massive amount of experience and teamwork over a whole number of years. And the place where it's showing up most is in transportation, especially airline travel. You know, there's just a lot of people who are newbies in the airline industry, and they don't know the complexities. You know, I mean, it's uniquely susceptible to weather. I mean, airlines, more than any other transportation system, is uniquely susceptible to weather and, you know, and government rules. And, you know, and I mean, none of the freight trains stopped during the lockdown. I mean, the boats from overseas got locked down because they couldn't bring their stuff ashore, but they still made the voyages. But airlines if you don't have any passengers, that's a disincentive for taking off. Yeah,
that I just heard a podcast in the last 6 months by someone who's starting a new, you know, airline model to create supersonic flight again, to make supersonic airplanes that, like the Concorde, to bring that back into the mainstream.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's kind of a
It's a guess.
It is a guess, right? Yeah, that people are going to want to. That people are going to want.
Yeah,
to,
I don't know who's going to want to do it, but because right. by necessity, the cabin has to be cramped, small and cramped. You know, because the heat differential.
Well, you said what they've been able to overcome with that is through advances in materials and stuff to make it a little more comfortable. Yeah. I guess. Yeah.
Well, I guess, I mean, neither of the airlines that, well, the only two planes that really developed was the Tupolev, which was a Russian version of the Concorde. And I think they only made six of them. And out of the six, I think three of them crashed in the first 12 months with fully loaded with passengers. And that's a disincentive, you know, that would be a disincentive for me. You got a 50% chance of getting killed on your first flight.
Good.
No.
Yeah, that's I don't like chances.
Those are bad betting odds. Those are bad betting odds, you know. And then the Concorde, which was a European project, British, French, and some other companies, and it never made any money. It was, you know, it was a white elephant right from the beginning. And the other thing is that you get twice the jet lag from traveling that fast than you do taking a normal flight. So if
it's
you can go
right.
It takes, you know, a flight to London.
Yeah.
You leave at, if you're doing it overnight, you leave here at 7 and you get to London at 7. It's 5 hour time difference. It's a 5 hour time differential. So it took you 7 hours to get there. Basically, you know, you're going to get basically a 5 or 6 day jet lag out of that, unless you take counteractions. I mean, there's all sorts of counteractions that you can take personally to do that. And, you know, but getting to London in 3 hours, I think it's a big whack on your system. And, somebody's guessing and somebody's going to bet and hey, go for it.
And what was your, I'm interested to hear your thought about the betting, you know, so that this is really, because you're actually the only way to have a guess really pay off is to the proportion that you're willing to bet on it.
Yeah.
You can, there's no prize for guessing right without a bet.
Yeah. No, guessing is a possibility. A bet is a commitment. You know, it's a bit like bacon and eggs for the chicken. It's simply a form of, it's just simply a form of involvement. For the pig, it's a total commitment.
Right, right. Oh, you know?
That's between, the chicken is guessing, well, I can, you know, I can risk I can risk an egg.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, you know, but for the pig, you know, I mean, what part of me doesn't come back, you know? Yeah, but I think it allows you to really evaluate things like the new part of AI thing. It's a guess that this is going to be bigger and bigger in the future. But it's not clear who specifically will be the winners, you know, on many different fronts. I mean, this is going to cause big economic change. I agree with that. I think it is. But it's hard to pinpoint specifically what the changes are that you could bet on or not bet on. You know, it's
that's where I've been going in my mind. I just saw the headlines today looking up some stuff, how Amazon, and the headlines are Amazon flooded with Kindle ChatGPT books. Like there's a wave of books that are now being uploaded into Amazon because everybody now empowered with their ability to have ChatGPT write book is, and that's kind of like the leading thing that all the ChatGPT opportunists, low-hanging fruit, are betting on. Hey, you can get ChatGPT to write these books and they'll sell. But
My concern, as I've expressed in previous conversations, is that this exponential output capability for content is being fed into a decidedly fixed capacity to consume it. That's not keeping up. And I don't know what that means yet.
Well, there's no expansion. It's like, you know, if you look at the beginning of the, well, let's go back in Cyrus McCormick.
Yeah.
Cyrus McCormick's invention couldn't have happened in Europe because there was no cheap land and there was no freely available. It was lacking three things. It was lacking a location in Europe. Like, you know, I mean, France has wheat fields. You know, France produces wheat and Spain produces wheat. But there was no cheap land on which to do it. Number two is that economically there was no easy money to finance it. And number three, there was no available labor to take advantage of the situation. Whereas doing it in, you know, let's see, 1840s, I think it was in Cyrus McCormick, 1840s.
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
1840s, every 10 years, there were two or three new states that had flat land, you know,
right.
And wheat's the easiest food on the planet.
The prairies.
Yeah. I mean, you plant it and you harvest it. There's no in between. And therefore, if you cut the cost, I mean, if you just extraordinarily cut the cost of harvesting it, which the reaper does, and it just explodes. Plus, you had an overabundance of free, low-cost money, free low-cost land, free low-cost labor. I mean, you had three free abundant resources that you could take advantage.
Yeah.
Plus, it was being done within the framework of the Mississippi River Valley system, which is the greatest usable water system in the world. The navigable water in the world, river water, is the Mississippi Valley. I mean, the Mississippi isn't even the longest of the rivers.
Right.
The Missouri goes into it. So you had all these pluses. I mean, Warren Buffett would have bet on that.
Right. And you think about that leverage.
25 years from now, are people going to be consuming wheat? Is it going to be a
part of that? Oh, it's good.
Yeah,
I love it. Yeah,
there was nothing but not only that, but I'm sure that there were other competing inventions with Cyrus McCormick, but he thought it back so that everybody was a winner. Everybody was a winner. The farmer was a winner.
Yeah.
The markets were a winner. The labor markets were a winner. The banks were a winner. Everybody won, you know? Everybody won.
Yeah. And that was the thing, the big thing at the World's Fair. He was able to, you know, have one farmer beat the work of 14 men. And that's a pretty good demonstration of a better idea. What a capacity multiplier, you know. And then the free idea of give me the money from the harvest was such a revolution, you know.
Yeah,
my mind. I'm very excited about, you know, my next journal sessions coming up this week, brainstorming and betting. I think
guessing and betting. I mean, first of all, I mean, it emphasizes your insight. You know, it really reinforces your insight that you feel free to brainstorm because, in fact, you're not betting. You're not betting on anything that you're writing down. Okay,
right.
And I think that. So it's. I just one of my next quarterly books. You know, is guessing and betting, and guesses and bets. Guesses and bets. It's called. But anyway, that accounts for 100% of the future.
You're right.
Guesses
and
bets.
That fits
because
with,
part of the future. Because part of the future is people saying all sorts of guesses with the hope that somebody will bet on their guess.
Yes,
I mean, I do that every day. I do that every day. You do that every day. I'm always making guesses about what I think is going to work in the future. And what I'm asking you to do is to bet money to see if that's true.
You know what's so funny is, to me, I just had this insight that guessing is like, you know, imagining if, and betting is applying yourself. I mean, that's really that's really what it is. That's the two sides of the, you know, I think I've been sharing with you the equation that, you know, seeing, breaking, parsing down the words of imagine if you applied yourself, that those and if are definitely guessing, right? That's brainstorming and thinking about what could possibly be. And then it's got to go through the filter of you. And it's got to get approval from the committee that's going on inside your head, which is steadfastly committed to, you know, the basic things of, you know, staying alive and recreating and eating all the calories and avoiding pain, seeking pleasure and conserving energy. Everything has to be filtered through that committee to get into applied in order to get approved to actually do anything. But it's the application of your self, your sphere, energy, leadership, and finances. It's placing those bets on what are you going to do about it? What are you going to invest in about it? What are you going to, how are you going to place that bet that can pay off in the future? Very fascinating, Dan.
Well, here's the thing. We just had a real moment over the last month, let's say now, of the vice president of a major brand of beer making a guess. Okay.
Oh, my goodness. Yes.
And then bet on it. And then bet on it. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I was talking to a bunch of girls who got very angry. You know, they were very angry about the whole thing. And I said, yeah, but look at from her standpoint, she guessed that the world is going woke. And that applies, you know, that applies to all products and all brands. I'm going to just get out there and be in front of this, you know, and I'm 39 years old and I'm the VP of marketing for one of the brands. And I have aspirations to move up. You know, I have aspirations to move up from where I am. And, you know, and so I'm going to bet at putting a person, controversial person in the cultural world right now on a can of beer, that's going to be a big payoff. I'll move the brand. And she certainly did.
Yes. Oh, boy.
$6 billion losses so far. That was a minus $6 billion bet.
Unbelievable. I didn't realize the measurement of it when it happened. That's wild.
Yeah. But one of the reasons is that there are certain things that people want certain kind of permanence in, and that's their guess. And it's interesting, I was reading the article, and it was the fact that there, and this article had deeper research than I've ever seen before, but it was a thing that in the world today, there are 5,500 companies that have lasted continuously more than 500 years, which I think is
how many
neat.
Companies?
5,500.
Wow, I had no idea there were that many.
3,500 are in Japan, okay? And it has to do with all sorts of cultural, political, economic factors that are peculiar to Japan, not going into it right now. But the interesting thing about it is that in Japan, the 3,500, two-thirds of them are related to alcohol in some way. Okay, so it's either a brewery, and, you know, they have rice as one of their alcoholic, you know, ingredients. Sake is a big ingredient, and they make fruit wines, all kinds of fruit wines. So there's a wide variety. Japan has quite a wide spectrum of different kinds of beers, liquors, wines, but two-thirds of them are alcohol-related. And so I was saying, why alcohol related? And I said, well, alcohol is probably the most emotional of drugs. Okay. And what I mean by that is, first of all, it's the most communal of drugs. You know, you don't get together and have a wild pot party.
Wild, right.
You know, you don't have a really rambunctious tailgate party with opioids.
Right.
See, most of the drugs put you into your world, allowing you to feel good about being completely isolated and alone, most of the drugs.
Yeah.
They kind of reward you for disconnecting and dropping out. But alcohol is the one that you do if you want to feel closer. You want to feel closer. You want to feel more communal. Yeah. It's got a lot of romance tied to it. It's got a lot of babies are created out of alcoholic moments.
Social lubricant, right.
Yeah, and it's easier to sell things if people are slightly inebriated and everything else. So my feeling is that she didn't realize that she was tampering with something that has great emotional and cultural force, okay? And she was going to change the entire context of what a low alcohol beverage was going to meet. And she got her market results. You know, she got some feedback. She's taken a leave of absence from the company.
Oh my goodness. Is that true? I didn't realize that. Wow.
It was announced on Friday. And they're bringing in a big hitter to take over, the VP of all marketing for Anheuser-Busch worldwide is taking over that brand. So they're pulling in somebody, so they're going to have to adjust their thinking about who their customers are and who their marketplace is. But it was fun to watch it. I'm not involved in the product at all. I'm not involved in the brand at all. But I was just watching that she made a guess and she made a bet.
Yeah.
And it was a bad guess. Yeah. And it turned out to be a disastrous bet. And I said, well, that's what you get. That's what you get from a bad guess and a bad bet.
Right. Yeah, wild. And, it's an interesting, not for nothing. It's a different environment to make that kind of bet when you're in a big corporate environment compared to as in an entrepreneurial organization where you're the whole thing.
Yeah. Well, but it's interesting that you can have all sorts of very interesting discussions about world affairs, current world of trends and everything, just from the standpoint of guesses and bets.
Yeah, I think it's great. I hadn't thought about it like that, but the first thing that came to my mind was my discussion with myself in 1999, making those investment decisions. And, I realize it now, 20 years felt like that's a long way away in 1999, but here we are, 24 years later, and I see those were good bets.
Yeah. The one thing is and we can pick any one of these topics up on the next podcast. But when you think, I'm seeing a lot of silliness in the media about how the U.S. is about to lose its reserve currency for the dollar.
That's all over the news now. Everybody's worried about that. Yeah.
And what they don't realize is that these periods are a guess and a bet. Okay.
Yes.
So you say why we might favor the American currency over other currencies. Okay. And the one being put forward is a united effort on the part of China and Russia to create an alternative currency. And they're getting outstanding advanced thinking countries like Iran and Saudi Arabia. And
Brazil
and all North Korea, North Korea is going to be part of it and everything like that. And Cuba will probably join in.
Yeah.
And I said, so in other words, you think that economics tied to totalitarian countries where every bad thing can happen to people is a good reserve currency that we can really bet on this in the future. Yeah. And you know, together those countries have a military capability that's not equal to America's carrier fleet. You know, like just
Salvation Army. That's somebody.
That's the army. They don't even have the firepower of the Salvation Army.
That's right. Exactly.
All right. Well, this was a great one. This is a great one today.
Yeah,
I think we've introduced a secret go-to sauce, guessing and betting.
I'm doubling down. I'm guessing that this is going to be a very fertile discussion, and I'm going to bet on that this week and come prepared next week with even some bets from my guessing.
You bet.
I love it. Thanks, Dan. I always enjoy it.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay. I'll talk to you next time. Bye.